This is the State of Things live from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. A leading voice for conservative thought in Greensboro has gone silent. The last issue of the Rhino Times goes on the stands next week. The weekly newspaper kept a close watch on city government for more than 21 years. We'll take a close look at their reporting legacy in the Triad. Also, this very day, May 9th, 2013, the 100th anniversary of Winston-Salem, the cities of Winston and Salem, joined together a century ago. We'll talk about that. Jeff DeBerry, WUNC's Greens Bureau Chief, has been keeping a watch on those and other stories and joins us today. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Frank.
Rhino Times. Tell us about the Rhino Times. What is it, and why is it going under?
It's a free conservative weekly. Began in 1991, and this is a paper that gives voice to the conservative folks in Greensboro. It has changed a bit in time in the last decade or so. It's very closely a watchdog of city government, county government. It has very consistently covered municipal politics for the last two decades, and it's got a, you know, it carries the New York Times crossword puzzle. It's got a weekly column from Orson Scott Card, the sci-fi, well-known sci-fi writer, and it has just it's free. I think I said it's free. They're not making money. In fact, they're losing it. The editor said when he made the announcement a couple of weeks ago that they would stop publishing, he was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. What exactly that means, we're not it's not clear, but they're not making money. They're not making anywhere near enough money to keep going. So he had announced that the edition two Thursdays ago would be the last, maybe last Thursday, and there was such an outpouring of support from folks. People stepped up and said, we want one more edition, we want one more paper, and they have, you know, the presses are warming up again. They're going to do one more edition, kind of a chance for the writers to say farewell next Thursday.
The Rhino is kind of an unusual animal in that it is, when we think about urban weeklies, they tend to be progressive. The Indy, mm-hmm. in the Triangle, Yes Weekly here, all of them and all around the country are progressive papers. The Rhino is unusual for that. Tell us about that and the kinds of coverage they did, because it wasn't only conservative thought. They did some really detailed, lengthy pieces on city government.
They did. I would say it's almost the antithesis of USA Today. If you've ever traveled or woken up in a hotel room and you've got 8 to 12 inches on what happened in Cleveland this week or a natural disaster in the Middle East, whatever the case is, with the Rhino Times, you've got like 30, 35 inches. You've got a novel. You've got one article to sift through during lunch. I mean, it's comprehensive, and it's much more layered than anything you're going to see at this point on the internet or in a daily newspaper.
Conservatives, they got the money. How come their paper folded?
I am not running the business here.
Okay.
And that is one thought that I did have when we heard that there were hundreds of thousands of dollars in the hole, and after this outcry, this show of support, there would be one more paper. I did tend to think, well, you know, a small weekly, how small is the staff? How many people are paying attention to the business and the journalism, or both? Is there somebody in charge of the money? Not a criticism as much as, you know, this is the hand that some of yeah. us are dealing with in journalism right now.
You know, those organic collard growers, not a lot of money, and they're reading the other papers. Well, let's move on a little bit. 100 years of Winston-Salem. And by the way, two cities named after cigarettes right next to each other.
Shocking,
how weird is that?
Yeah. The cigarettes came first.
Oh.
this idea, this notion actually came about in the 1870s, the end of the 1870s. The U.S. Postal Service gave Winston and Salem one postal code, and they started to share space and share things. And this had been talked about in 1879, which, you know, is 34 years before the actual merger happened. Didn't happen, in large part because Salem, the older of the two cities, was much more of a religious, secular community, and Trade Street in Winston, which is now an arts district, the heart of the arts district in Winston, was an area of trade where farmers would come and they would sell their tobacco, they would sell their crops. And the concern from the folks in Salem, as a historian has shared with me, is that they would come, they would sell whatever it was, the goods they had, and they would have these pockets full of cash. And there are all these temptations on Trade Street, like prostitutes and gambling and liquor, and Salem...
In the Triad?
Salem didn't want any part at that point. So it kind of went on the back burner. And it's interesting, because when the two cities did merge in 1913, there was there was no fanfare. There was no celebration. There was no parade. It was more or less an inevitable thing that was going to happen. It was a line item in a city council meeting. The alder people, the alder council, had aldermen had met on it earlier in the year in February. And when it came up in May, they voted and the city became one.
It was kind of like Sodom-Gomorrah. Is that what you're saying? There was a, and how did they reconcile? How did they reconcile all of that? Are they now? How did they function as two separate cities, two hearts, or do they beat as one?
They came together pretty quickly. And if you have ever been to Winston-Salem, I think that the Salem proper, the Moravian culture, has been preserved. It's interesting thinking back in the last 100 years between the stock market and both world wars and the civil rights movement. There weren't any major points of contention between Winston and Salem, at least that anybody has been able to come up with and tell me about.
Baseball team, the Dashes, that's how
I
they got the name?
I call them the Hyphens.
And there's a technical distinction now. We have the
Marmish. The nickname is the Dash. We should say that for people that don't know. It's the Winston-Salem Dash, but you know, a dash separates and a hyphen joins. So should be the Winston-Salem Hyphens, but take it up with someone else.
Because you're a joiner, not a divider. That's what we said about you, Jeff. Hey, let's talk about one more issue right here in Greensboro now. The tree ordinance.
Right.
We've been talking about these trees for a while now.
For too long, some would contend.
And there is one now, or a tree ordinance that's on the table.
There's a draft,
Well, tell us what it is.
Where do you want me to pick up?
What trees are we talking about? We're talking about power company, right? Duke Energy, Duke Power, cutting back trees to clear their lines, and that had become a problem in Greensboro.
It did. They came and they cut. Some residents will say they slashed, and they were way too aggressive in December. Homeowners were ticked off, which is putting it nicely. They called for action. Greensboro does not have, still to this moment, does not have a tree ordinance that has passed that is, you know, a recognized ordinance in this city. So we've got two sides of this thing. We've got a company that is a major corporation, and they're going to try to maximize profits as best they can because they're a corporation. And you have these homeowners that are worried about property value and aesthetics and why it's really necessary to cut down a tree if they could just perhaps trim it every 4 or 6 years, whatever it is. So one of the big that's the issue in and of itself. This came about back in January. Here we are in May, and an ordinance still hasn't passed, still hasn't gotten through, and residents are extremely frustrated. You know, we've talked on this program before about, you know, a possibility of a downtown performing arts center. This isn't a performing arts center. This is a tree ordinance. And city leaders have not pushed this thing forward yet, and some people are very, very upset about it.
At issue here, how much of the tree can we cut? What are the rules about when to cut down, when to cut back, and how far you may cut back?
The tree clearance term
reflects a set of numbers. So what are the numbers in this ordinance? What are the rules about when to cut when and how far? Inches, right?
Let's start with Raleigh and Cary because it's a little more concrete there. They have a 7-foot line ordinance around primary lines and a 4-foot line clearance around secondary lines.
Meaning the lines, they can go back 4 or 7 feet from the line, back that far.
You picture a line and you draw a radius around it of 7 feet. Anything within that area of a primary line can be trimmed. And they also, you know, delineate how much can be trimmed if in fact it's in that radius. Can you cut the whole tree down or just part of it, so on and so forth. Well, they've been working on this ordinance for going on 3 months now, and they don't have a tree line clearance. They don't have numbers. And my question again and again has been, what are the numbers? Well, they're in the ordinance. I don't see them. Where are they? What are the numbers? And we're not getting to a place where the city council members or anybody involved can say, oh, it's going to be a 12-foot tree line clearance or a 6-foot tree line clearance. There are no numbers at this point.
You know, I know you've been working on this particular part of the story just over the past week since the ordinance has been written. I was sitting in your office before the show started. You were on the phone with a city council member who drafted the legislation, and I could hear that you asked the question over and over and over again. I've been on your side of the phone when you asked the question, so what are the numbers? And then you come back and ask the same question with about a 3-minute gap. So I'm not sure what they were saying, but it had nothing to do with feet or inches.
No. They are proud of the ordinance because they think it is going to create an appeals process for homeowners, which isn't in place at the moment. Residents want a 2- or 3-step appeals process. Currently, the draft calls for a 1-step appeals process. They say that it will protect private property homeowners, which doesn't exist elsewhere in the state. I haven't called all 100 other counties. I don't know if that's the case or not, but that's what city council members are saying. But when you ask about the line clearance, they're very vague. They say, oh, well, you know, this protects private property owners, and this is a floor-to-ceiling issue. And, it gets vague. It gets very bureaucratic in a hurry, and it's just a shame. It's a tree ordinance. You know, it's city, I think, in theory, should be between the major corporation and the homeowners, strike a balance, find out what is a fair compromise or a set of compromise, and move forward from there.
And there's going to be a hearing, but apparently Duke Energy is going to be sitting with the city and not with the homeowners as part of the participants. They're actually presenters?
Because of the ongoing frustration from some of the residents, there will be a community meeting tonight. And as it has been described to me by both homeowners and city council members, it's a chance for the city and Duke to explain the ordinance to homeowners.
The city and Duke.
But the city and Duke. To talk about the ordinance to because the city is adamant. I've talked to several people. They are adamant that a line clearance is in there. So I say, well, where is it? I don't see it. And they say, I say, well, just tell me what it is. And what I've heard from four different people is, I'm not comfortable giving you the I'm in my car. I don't have it in front of me. I can't quote you on
it. If we told you that, Jeff, we'd have to kill you. Yeah.
Sad. Tree line.
Well, we will. I guess we'll stay tuned, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Jeff DeBury, our Greensboro Bureau Chief on the State of Things. Coming up, Evan Olson is going to play us out this segment, and there's more to come. Sounds from the ocean floor on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Evan Olson.
It was cold in the night of an early morning light. We were trying to do a good thing, but we the bridges we crossed to see what we lost were gone. It leads me to a memory in time that keeps coming back to me over and over. Your dream in your pocket and your heart up in your sleeve. Nothing ever comes from waiting for as long as you believe that the reason we lost